imitative polyphony, where the individual voices we are hearing are imitating each other by overlapping the same melody, and non-imitative polyphony. Let us first talk about imitative polyphony. There are two kinds of imitative polyphony. First, there's strict imitative polyphony. That's when one voice imitates another voice exactly. For example, if you sing row, row, row your boat, you're going to have three people or three groups of people imitating each other exactly, singing the same melody at an interval of time as the other groups. We call this in German a canon, or in English a round. And the word round is a good word because it seems to indicate the cyclical nature of a canon. That is, we're singing the same thing. It's like a dog chasing its tail over and over again, a cyclical compositional technique. The other kind of imitative polyphony is non-strict imitative polyphony. This is the great bulk of the polyphony we will encounter both in this course and in the great world out there. Imitative polyphony that is non-strict simply means that the voices in a composition, and I say voices, this means voices or instruments, the voices in a composition are imitating each other, but not dogmatically, not strictly. And as a result, we don't get into that cyclical groove that we do with the canon. The music can continue to develop and go somewhere. As an example of both strict and non-strict imitative polyphony, I would play you Josquin's Ave Maris Stella Mass, the Agnus Dei, Part 3, which we listened to in an earlier class. We have a strict canon between the tenor and soprano voices, but non-strict imitation between the bass and the alto voices. So two of the voices are strictly imitating each other, and the bass and the alto voices are kind of imitating, but really they're not. They're just kind of filling in the gaps between. An unusual example of the presence of strict and non-strict imitative polyphony simultaneously. What I want you to perceive is not the strict or non-strict. What I simply want you to perceive is the imitative polyphony as each voice comes in turn with the same melodic material, but overlapping with the other voices. The other main sort of polyphony is non-imitative polyphony, and this is a different kettle of fish entirely. It implies, non-imitative polyphony, the presence of two or more completely different melodies, none of them being more important than the other. This is very unusual, and it will be very striking when we hear it. We heard such a non-imitative piece earlier in this course when we listened to Machaut's Quant en Moy. I pointed out that we had two singers, a mezzo-soprano and a tenor, singing two entirely different poems and using two entirely different melodies. Machaut, Quant en Moy. The third of our textures that we must define is a homophonic texture or homophony. This is a texture in which one melody line predominates and all the other melodic material is heard as being secondary or accompanimental. The first composed homophony dates to the Renaissance, to the late 15th century.